Guinness says it's a day to remember the sacrifices made by those who protect our freedoms. A jury of 10 whites and 2 blacks told an Ohio judge today it can't agree unanimously on a verdict in the murder trial of a white police officer who fatally shot a black motorist. Now fired University of Cincinnati police officer Ray Tensing had pulled over Sam DeBose for a traffic violation. The judge ordered the panel to keep trying to reach a verdict. They've retired for the evening. On Wall Street, the Dow up by 40 points, the Nasdaq rose 28, the S&P declined 3, oil down to $43.41 a barrel. This is SRN News.
Experts in business. 620 AM. KEXB. Alliance for the Brave. A program that advocates for our veterans and first responders. Presented by Certified Senior Advisor Jim Blythe, Veterans Telemed, PX3 Brain Science, PX3 Patriots, and the Texas Veterans Commission. Alliance for the Brave works in support of those crossing the line of departure from service life to civilian life, with a focus on bringing the core leadership values of honor, duty, and service to our communities. America, let's take action to take care of our brave men and women who have put their lives on the line to serve us nationally and locally. It's time to tune in, join in, and plug in. Welcome to Alliance for the Brave, serving and empowering those who have served in the line of duty.
Good evening, DFW. In the air everywhere, from the mighty Trinity to the Red River Valley, you're listening to Alliance for the Brave. I'm Jim Blythe, U.S. Navy veteran and certified senior advisor. And tonight, I have a very, very special Veterans Day program for you. I have a very, very special program. I have a gentleman who was the one who got the message aboard his ship that World War II had started. Ladies and gentlemen, I would like to introduce my dad, Ed Blythe. Good evening, Dad.
Thank you.
I'm so excited. This is the first time you've ever been in a studio with me.
It is.
It's a lot of fun, isn't it?
Well, we're going to find out.
We're going to find out. We're going to find out. Dad, one of the things, as I grew up as a child, the family reunions, the times we all got together, the Thanksgivings, everybody in the room was a veteran. My grandfather had been a Navy veteran, had been a career officer, commanded ships. Uncle Jimmy flew B-17s. Uncle John was in the Battle of Bastogne. Uncle Bill was in the Navy. So we had all of this family, and I'm third generation Navy. But your story, which over time you told me, is so interesting. Because would you please tell us, starting with when you went aboard the Idaho and when, and what you guys were doing, and what led up to the message you've got tonight?
Well, to begin with, I went aboard the Idaho in midsummer 1941. I was a recent graduate of the Navy Training School for radiomen, and I went aboard when I reached Pearl Harbor on the transport on Saturday night. Sunday morning at 8 o'clock, we got underway, and we left Pearl Harbor. And the first place we stopped was Isthmus of Panama, went through the canal to Guantanamo Bay, on up to Norfolk, and then we realized why we were there. The British had for themselves stopped the German battleship. And so we were there because that battleship had a sister ship, the Von Tirpitz, which was up in Norway in a fjord. So we, three battleships of Battleship Division 3, the New Mexico, the Mississippi, and the Idaho, were transferred from the Pacific to the Atlantic. We made several small training deals, and then went into port in Portland, Maine, just before Labor Day. The day after Labor Day, we put to sea, and woe and behold, there were two battleships, a heavy cruiser, the Wichita, 13 destroyers, and five troop ships where we were taking troops to Iceland to occupy Iceland so that the British could go home and defend their own homeland.
Now, this was prior to our involvement in World War II, but the Brits were pulling their troops back to homeland, and we replaced them with our Marines in Iceland. Most people don't know that was going on.
Not only Marines, but also we took the First Army.
Wow. There.
That was it. And then we became the northern terminus of a kind of a deal where we supported our destroyers who helped with the convoys from stateside up to Iceland, and then they turned them over to the British and went on. After we arrived up there, and we were anchored in the Helvafjord, some 40 miles west of Reykjavik, we took aboard the survivors of the Reuben James, which was our World War I destroyer that was doing convoy duty. And then later, we saw the big hole in the Kearney. And this was before, of course, Pearl Harbor. We were doing all that we could. Then one night, we got a surprise. The captain came on, gave an announcement, and said that we had just, through intelligence, heard that the von Tirpitz was leaving Norway. And so we left our fjord and went around to the west of Iceland up through the Straits of Denmark so that we would be on the front side, and the British came out and went around the east side of Iceland, and we hoped to catch them between us. Thank goodness they had as good of intelligence as we did, so they went back in and didn't want to face us. We had achieved our purpose.
Now, for those of you who don't know, the von Tirpitz was the sister ship to the Bismarck, and the Bismarck was at that time the biggest battleship in the world. I believe the guns on that thing were like 18-inch guns, and you guys had 14-inch guns. So you were a little bit outclassed by the von Tirpitz, but you managed to have enough show of force that they stayed up there. And I remember you telling me about how you had to go up on the mast and change the antenna, and it was snowing and cold. You know, that must have been a cold, cold winter.
Well, it was. The interesting part of that was the Germans put ashore a small portable radio that broadcast on the same frequency as our NSS in Washington, D.C., which was the Navy radio station that broadcast everything. Very low frequency, very high power. It drags its feet, so everybody had to listen to it, ships or stations.
Now, this was broadcast not in verbal, but in Morse code.
That is correct.
And your job was to listen with a set of earphones, just like you've got on right now, to the Morse code, and then type whatever the message was.
This is correct. We did this every day. And the longer we were up there, the longer and more time they spent on the air, because there was more and more traffic. We were all there and copying. I never knew what I was copying, because they were in five-letter code groups.
So there was encrypted. Now, Dad, one of the things is you made a bet with somebody.
Well, I made that bet earlier when we were on the way up to Norfolk from Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. There was a friend of mine by the name of Crowshar that I bet him $5 that we would be in war before January the 1st, 1942.
And then what happened that fateful night on December the 7th? Or was it, by then it was December the 8th, but...
No, it wasn't. It was still...
December the 7th?
December the 7th, because the Japanese planes attacked at 8 o'clock Pearl Harbor time. If you'll remember, it was noontime on the West Coast, and the further east you came, the later it was. And by the time it got to Iceland, it was after dinner.
Mm.
I had gone to dinner and then had gone on watch and had been sitting there copying for a while. And then instead of it being in code, it was a message that was addressed to all ships and stations. And it came in this way. This is no drill, X. Japanese planes attacking Pearl Harbor. X, this is no drill. So then the next message that came in also was in plain English, and it said, X, this is no drill. Execute war plans WPX-10 against the Japanese Empire. X, this is no drill. And it was signed, Sink Us.
Wow. You got the message, and you also got the $5.
Yes, I got the $5. That is correct.
So I tell you what, we're going to go have a break with our partners, and when we come back, we're going to talk about then what you guys did. You left up there, and you headed back to Pearl Harbor. So we're going to talk more about that when we come back. Dad, I just want to thank you for coming on. For all of our veterans listening tonight, this is my dad, Ed Blythe, radioman in the Navy. And just remember, I'm third generation Navy. So we'll be back in just a second on KEXB 620 AM.
From Wall Street to North Texas, this is 620 AM, KEXB.
How much time do you spend worrying about money? A recent survey by a major investment firm found that on average, investors spend an hour and 20 minutes each day worrying about money. That adds up to 475 hours a year. And what exactly are we stressing about? Respondents to the survey said their top three concerns are a catastrophic event using up their retirement funds, living longer, and their retirement funds not keeping up with inflation. If your financial fears are causing you to worry hundreds of hours each year, spend 1 hour in a complimentary consultation with a Lucia Capital Group advisor. If you're concerned about outliving your money or the threat of inflation, turn to the experience and guidance of a Lucia Capital Group retirement strategist. Call 800-644-1150, 800-644-1150, or schedule a consultation by clicking Contact Us at luciacap.com. That's luciacap.com. Securities offered through Lucia Securities, LLC, member FINRA SIPC, a subsidiary of Lucia Capital Group and affiliate of Lucia Wealth Services.
Have you racked up more than $10,000 in credit card debt? Are you barely getting by, making minimum payments? You should know, the credit card companies are tricking you into thinking there's no way out. Credit card companies would rather you didn't know that there are ways you can become debt-free and you don't have to pay the entire amount you owe. There are debt relief programs that help people like you escape overwhelming credit card debt. National Debt Relief has helped tens of thousands of people just like you reduce more than $500 million of debt. National Debt Relief has helped so many people, they're A-plus rated by the Better Business Bureau. You don't have to declare bankruptcy or take out a consolidation loan. You have the right to settle your debt for a mere fraction of what you owe. Reduce a large portion of your debt now. Call National Debt Relief at 800-518-4020. 800-518-4020. 800-518-4020.
Hi, this is Pat Harrington, and I want to introduce you to one of my new companies, Bad Boy Guns. At Bad Boy Guns, we create the finest custom-crafted tactical firearms in the industry, designed specifically to fit your individual needs. Whether it's for personal defense, home defense, military, private security, hunting, or sport shooting, we're there for you. Call or click for more info on how we can help you choose and build the perfect firearm. Find us at badboyguns.com or call 214-912-6168.
Have you ever wanted to improve your health or energy, or maybe decrease any aches or pains? Or perhaps you've even wanted to increase your range of motion or metabolism. Hello, I'm Jason Brown, certified exercise physiologist, personal trainer, and host of the Health Matters segment on Alliance for the Brave, Friday nights at 6. Join in to discuss critical health topics because your health matters. It's time to start living a better life, balanced in wellness and blessed in fitness. So tune in to Health Matters, Friday nights at 6. 620 AM, KEXB.
620 AM, KEXB. Experts in business in North Texas.
You're listening to Alliance for the Brave, honoring, serving, and empowering those who have served in the line of duty. Tonight's program is presented by Jim Blythe, Certified Senior Advisor, BX3 Foundation, BX3 Brain Science, and the Texas Veterans Commission. Learn more about our mission, our partners, and how you can plug in with us at AllianceForTheBrave.com. And now back to the conversation.
Welcome back. This is Jim Blythe, U.S. Navy Vietnam veteran, with my dad tonight, United States Navy veteran, World War II. And we were just talking about, he was the radioman aboard the battleship Idaho that got the message, it's not a drill, we're at war. And for a lot of people that don't know, the battleship Idaho was what we call a capital ship. It was a battleship. It was built in 1919. So you were on it basically 40 years later, or 20 plus years later, excuse me.
Yes.
And, that had to be, back then you swung in hammocks. You didn't have nice racks. Life was a little bit tougher then than it was for me, wasn't it?
Well, yes. When I went aboard the Idaho out in Pearl the first time, what they did was show me my hooks. My hooks were welded to an I-beam on the overhead, and I was able to hang one hook of the hammock there and my rope on the other hook and pull it up just like it was a block and tackle real tight, and then reach up and grab the I-beam and swing old Ed up and put him in there.
Yeah, boy, I'm glad we didn't have to do that. Mine was bad enough as it was. All right, to go back, you got the message. You were in the fjords of Iceland.
Yeah.
You were basically trying to contain a very, very large German battleship. And then you guys headed off of that line, and you headed back to Pearl, correct?
Well, the way it worked was I had gone on watch, as I said, after dinner. I received those shortly afterwards. And then 30 minutes or so later, another message came through addressed specifically to the Idaho, and it was totally in code, in five-letter code groups, so I never did know what it said. But I do know that when the watch was over about 12:30 that night, I went topside for a breath of fresh air and found that we were being topped off with fuel from a British tanker. We then left at 6 o'clock in the morning and came back with one destroyer to go stateside. And then when we arrived at stateside, we had time off a little bit because we got some new things. For instance, we got radar. We did not have radar on there before. Wow. We got so-called Chicago pianos. Instead of our 3-inch anti-aircraft gun, we got 4-barreled 1.1s. We got 4 of them instead of the 4 3-inchers. Instead of the 50 caliber machine guns along the lifelines, we got 20 millimeter Olicrons, which were bigger and stronger. And then we left and went back through the canal and joined because there had been a loss of ships, battleships, as a result of Pearl Harbor. We'd lost the Oklahoma, which was sunk. We had lost the Arizona, which was sunk. We'd lost the Wyoming. So Battleship Division 3 rejoined the Pacific Fleet. And then shortly thereafter, the Battle of Coral Sea, which was a total air battle, came along, and we had gone to sea with the 4 remaining battleships that we had, the Tennessee, the California, the Colorado, and the Pennsylvania, plus our three ships, and we were the second line of defense should the Japanese have overcome us at the Battle of Coral Sea.
So you were that picket line of defense.
Right.
Man, that had to, you know, that also, that had to make you a little nervous because of what had happened in Pearl. So you had actually, you docked in Pearl Harbor about, what, 6 months after the attack on Pearl Harbor, or less than that?
We didn't go back to Pearl Harbor. We went, stayed on the West Coast at either Long Beach or at San Francisco. In fact, we were in San Francisco Bay when the aircraft carrier Hornet went by on her way to sea, and we saw the B-25s on her.
Oh, wow. You know, that must have been something.
And those B-25s, we thought they were just hauling them down for the purpose of the Army. And that happened to be Shangri-La.
Yeah.
When the boys bombed Japan, Doolittle's raid. Then we kept going back and forth. And then about mid-year, I had made third-class radioman by that time, having been a striker before. Striker is an apprentice. And then when we got a news that they needed another guy to go to North Island, San Diego, to learn a different trick, so they sent me to learn blind landing, where you land in the fog. And so I had to learn how to operate the truck to back up the set, to point it in the right direction, to start the engine to get the power for this thing, and then to bring up the transmitters on it so that the glide path and the planes could come in through the fog. I finished the course. Then they sent me back to Pearl Harbor. So this was the third time I was at Pearl Harbor. The first time for one night, and then the second time, of course, is what I told you about, is catching the message. And the third time they sent me to Pearl Harbor, I went to Naval Air Station Ford Island, right in the middle of Pearl, and there was no blind landing equipment there, so they put me in assembly and repair. So I worked in assembly and repair for 2.5 years. One of the things that I was privileged to do was when Butch O'Hare, for whom the landing field
In Chicago
is named, mm-hmm. He was the first Navy ace with 5 kills.
Wow.
And he came there, and we had received the first F-4U Corsair. Hmm. The F-4U, of course, was very secret, hush-hush, the first one. And so they finally said, okay, Butch is going to fly it. Ed, you set the radio up. So I went to find, with my half dollar, to find the Zeus deal to get into the side, and there was no Zeus fastener.
Oh, my goodness.
So we had to take the seat out, lay the armor plate back, and there it was behind the pilot and behind the armor plate, and I brought it on frequency and got it ready. When he took it to the end of the runway and revved her up and came down the runway, it was a short field, a little over 3,000 feet, and he took off at the end of it and hung it at about an 85-degree angle on its prop. This is something we'd never seen, because this was a 2,000-horsepower engine in a plane, and oh, what a beauty it was.
Yeah, that was a plane that made a big difference. That plane was built here in Grand Prairie in Dallas, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. Chance Vaught.
Chance Vaught.
And
I remember that.
The fact is, your F-4U, the float planes on the Idaho, was the OS-2U. What the Navy does is, by the letter number designation, tell you what the plane is for and who built it. For instance, OS, Observation Scout, and U is Chance Vaught, or F for U is Fighter by Chance Vaught.
You know, there's still a few of those planes around, and I was very fortunate when I was in the CAF to be around the one that LTV, when Paul Thayer was president, had that plane rebuilt, and it looked brand new. It looked like it had just come out of the factory. And the old boy that flew that thing, man, he loved Guy Joe Smith, and he loved to fly that plane. All right, Dad, I tell you what, we're going to have to wrap it up because we've got some other things coming on. So I want to thank you with all my heart for coming here tonight and sharing with us your memories of how World War II got started for you and then what you did in Pearl Harbor. Another quick story, your favorite cake was pineapple upside down cake.
Oh, dear.
And everybody needs to know, not only were the guys out there, they were really, really struggling and trying to do everything, but my grandmother was saving up all of her little coupons. So when you came home, she bought a can of Dole pineapple and made you a pineapple upside down cake. And you'd been in Pearl Harbor for the last 3 years in Hawaii where they grew pineapple all over everything. That's still your favorite cake, isn't it?
It is. It is.
But Dad, thank you so much. Thank you so much for being here tonight. To all of my veteran friends, I want to say thank you so much for joining us tonight. Guys, it doesn't get no better than this, having your dad on to talk with you about Veterans Day. So Monday night, we're going to have an exciting program for you. Tuesday, Kemp Francis. Wednesday, You Need a Job. Ron Abrams will be here. Thursday night, Pat Harrington, the big gun. And then we'll be back Friday night with some great, great programming to help you to be in health with Jason Brown and myself. So this is Jim Blythe. I want to say thank you again to all of my veterans, all of my friends. Thank you, thank you, thank you for all you did. And for your families, thank you all you did as we got through the wars. And to my first responders, thanks for keeping us safe. Good night and God bless from Jim Blythe and Ed Blythe.
Your experts in business throughout North Texas. 620 AM KEXB.